The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Good to be able to do a Friday show. You know, it's been interesting with all this travel, but I'm ready to go again. But I'm glad that we're home this weekend. Look forward to seeing all of you out at Duty Noble Field as we take on the South Carolina Gamecocks. We'll have a preview of South Carolina in our first segment of the show. There's a lot going on these days. Football. Working through spring practice, we had four players for media availability yesterday. Running back Johnny Daniels, defensive end Deontay Anderson, offensive lineman Cannon Boone, and then linebacker edge Brandon Jennings. You can read or watch those features for free over at jeanspage.com. We make all the big room stuff free. We do. It's not premium when everybody has it, right? We've got some VIP content for you, too. Now's a great time to take advantage of that 50% off the annual subscription price that gets you through baseball season, summer camp season, fall camp, men's and women's basketball, and, of course, portal really heating up as well. And we'll talk some basketball stuff before we get out of here. But nevertheless, glad to be with you today. Happy Maroon Friday to everybody in the Bulldog Nation. Everybody, even though the ones I don't agree with. Glad that you're a part of our Mississippi State family. Hope it's a payday for you biweekly and weekly wage earners. Perhaps it is. And get out and go enjoy some good times this weekend. Cool stuff, man. Payday's a great day. It is. It is for all of us. And so I hope that you guys have had a good week and looking forward to a great weekend. There is some weather to be aware of. At this point, we don't know anything about any potential schedule changes. And, of course, I start getting those texts on Monday because everybody has that stupid weather app on their phone. They become amateur meteorologists. But, there is weather expected throughout the weekend. But at this point, we have not been told anything about any schedule changes. That's important to understand. As we get them, we will share them, as will the official accounts. It's a little different. You know, when I'm on the road, we get to deal with rumors a lot more, you know. Because I walk around the stadium, I talk to people, I'm like, hey, what's going on? And those event management people, a lot of times they get news, you know. And so I go share that with you all. Some friends hit me up last week and said, hey, man, glad you were down there. Our fans needed you. Because we had such crazy start times. But at home, it's a little different. You know, we have to always kind of get more official type stuff. But little rain in the forecast today, supposed to come around 3 o'clock, but should be out of here by game time. But again, kind of concerned about Saturday. We'll see. Supposedly the rain on Sunday is supposed to get out in the early morning hours. But I'm no Dr. Brown, in whom I trust. And so we will wait for their directive on all of this. But game time tonight. Should not be an issue. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We do. And I loved them before they were a sponsor to the show. One of the reasons that I partnered with them so many years is because I like doing business with winners. I like to recommend great businesses to you because of the fact that I hope that you trust me. You're listening to the show. I would not lead you in the wrong direction, for sure. Visit Bulldog Burger Company the next time that you want to have a night out with friends. Give mom or dad a night off from cooking. Get out and have maybe a business lunch with friends, work colleagues. Then in the evening, perhaps go to dinner. You can have an adult beverage there, you know, full service bar. So maybe have a glass of wine. I don't know your needs. You know, they've got some interesting drinks there for you, I'm sure. So whether it's a date night or a family night out, Bulldog Burger Company is the place to go. Find your own favorites. I am very much in favor of their hamburgers. I think they're the best hamburgers in the area, but without any question. But I do like the BLT salad on occasion. I don't know if I've ever finished it, though. It's a very substantial portion. I like it grilled. You may like it fried. That's up to you. But no matter how you get it, I recommend the dressings they make there every day. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Let's jump right on into South Carolina. The thing that, when I did my research into South Carolina this week, you know, people talk about that, you know, maybe we're snake bit. Guys, I think maybe South Carolina may be in a worse situation than us. You know, they opened the year 9-0. Let's kind of run through the schedule here. They're 18-12 overall, 1-2 in SEC play, just like us. They did beat Presbyterian on Tuesday, but 15-6 at home, 2-4 in true road games, 1-2 on neutral fields. We'd really like that to be 2-7. Yeah, they've been able to take like 1 of 3 just about every weekend in non-conference play. We want to make sure that we really need to get all three. At the bare minimum, we've got to have a winning weekend, but we really need all three. They opened the year with a three-game series against Sacred Heart. I said on the show then that that thing could be proved to be a little interesting. Well, it was in game one, but the other two ball games, South Carolina did pretty much what they wanted to do. They win the first game 5-3, then they mercy rule Sacred Heart in game two, 14-0, and then an 8-0 decision on Sunday, and people were like, hey, look at South Carolina. And Sacred Heart's been a pretty solid mid-major. Then they take down Winthrop 5-3. Very competitive game in the midweek. They get Queens on that Wednesday. We know them. 7-2 winners there. Queens not having a good year, as you guys probably expected. But I venture to say their midweek pitching is not very strong or robust, shall we say. Weekend number two brings Milwaukee to Founders, which I think is the second best ballpark in the conference. Game one, they get it 5-2, then 6-3 in game two, and then they finally get loose on Sunday and mercy ruled them 14-4 in 8 innings. They mercy ruled Gardner-Webb 14-4 in a midweek game, and then their first real test, they have the rivalry series from Clemson. Now, they do this a little bit different. They play one game at Clemson, one game at South Carolina, and one game on a neutral site. Well, Clemson sweeps the series 5-3, 5-1, 8-2. So just 4 runs scored on the weekend for South Carolina. And that's when people said, you know what, maybe they're not as good as we thought. Yeah, what do you know? They bounce back to get Davidson 7-3. They get the Citadel 9-1. And then it's a weekend series against Morehead State. I mean, you talk about non-conference scheduling as far as getting some run-a-wins. That's what South Carolina did. And Paul Mainieri in his first year there, they scheduled light. And I kind of get it. I mean, they weren't a team that had a lot of returners. But also, too, you know, you got to get some confidence for your kids. They win this series, but, man, it proved to be, I think, more competitive than people expected. They went on Friday 11-7. They went on Saturday 16-11. And then they complete the sweep with a 1-0 game on Sunday, March 9th. 1-0. Over Morehead State. If we beat Morehead State 1-0, even the people that were happy about it would not be very happy about it. They get Georgia State in midweek 7-1. Then it's SEC play. So Oklahoma makes the trip to Founders Park. The Sooners take 2 of 3. They win game 1, 8-5. They lose game 2, 11-5. And then the rubber game goes 10 innings, and Oklahoma gets the better of the Gamecocks 6-5 to take the series. The lone win in conference came in that middle game against Oklahoma. And maybe you guys are somewhat familiar with how that whole thing played out. You know, Cade Crosswind's the guy that pitched against us on Saturday in game 2. And we got to him, but he had a great relief appearance on Sunday, and then they moved Malachi Witherspoon back to Sunday and then put Crosswind in there on game 2 against us. But nevertheless, that's their lone conference win. They follow that up with a narrow victory on a neutral field at Segra Park against College of Charleston. The Gamecocks win that game 4-3. And again, that's the thing that I look at. It's not just South Carolina or even us. You look around the conference, midweek games have been a bit of an adventure. What's crazy about this game with Charleston is in the seventh inning, it was a 3-1 ball game in favor of Charleston. And then South Carolina gets 3 there in the seventh to take the lead, and they close it out with a couple of nice innings of relief. But little did you know, you'd be looking back in hindsight and saying, hey, what a gritty win. They travel to Arkansas, which has been a house of horrors for a lot of teams over the years. Dave Van Horn and the crew do a great job there. These games were not competitive. Arkansas gets them 12-2. They mercy rule them on Friday. They get them 12-3. I mean, just one base knock away from back-to-back mercy rulings. And then on Sunday, 11-4. So really, none of those games competitive. And again, you score 9 runs in an SEC weekend. It's tough. Averaging 3 runs a game, that's tough. They get North Carolina and Charlotte. They lose that game 13-8. Last weekend, they hosted Tennessee, which is, it's crazy for everybody. I mean, Tennessee, I told you guys after Houston, I thought they were the best team in the country. And people in the national college baseball media were like, no, LSU. Now that I've seen them all in person, I'm still sticking with Tennessee. Tennessee goes to Founders Park. They win 11-7, 7-5, and 7-2. And then, as we mentioned, they snapped the losing streak, which had basically run for almost 2 weeks now. They get Presbyterian 11-1. It was quite a ball game, 2-1, until South Carolina got loose there in the sixth and the seventh. And so tonight's first pitch, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream tonight's game on the ESPN app. Should be easy to find. You can hear the official radio call on the Mississippi State Radio Network. Now, let's take a look. And there's a VIP feature today about South Carolina's starter. And, we take a lot of pride in what we do over at Gene's Page. We really do. We want to be your eyes and ears and give you the most up-to-date information possible. So I'll give you a little bit of that. If you're a subscriber, you can read the analytics and things like that, and what he's more likely to throw. But so what's interesting about Jake McCoy, he is a left-hander. Last year, he was primarily a bullpen guy, got one start, beat Tennessee State. But he's 2-3 this year with an ERA of 6.59. 28 and two-thirds of an innings pitch. He's given up a run per inning, more than a run per inning. 30 hits, 30 runs. Now, 21 of those earned. He's had 48 strikeouts against 15 walks. So right at 3-1. I don't know. I got to go back and double-check that. I don't know if that's right. But nevertheless, 7 games, 7 starts. He started out as the Sunday starter and worked there for a couple of weeks and then moved into the Saturday role and then went to Friday. This will be his second Friday start in a row. And, man, that's tough. You get Tennessee in your very first one, then you got to hit the road in one of the SEC's most difficult venues. But, he's primarily a fastball slider combo guy. He will mix in a change from now and again, but it's a tight slider, not the big sweeping slider that so many people are accustomed to. But tunnels pretty well out of the fastball arm slot, same arm speed, just different grip. But, we got to jump on him. Now, the Saturday starter is Jarvis Evans Jr. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it should. He was at Georgia last year. Has 7 appearances this year, 6 starts, 3-0, 3.62 ERA on the season. He's thrown 32 and a third innings pitch. That is a staff high. He's allowed 29 hits, 13 runs, all of them earned, 32 Ks against just 7 walks. So almost 5-1. He has been susceptible to the home run. He has allowed 6 home runs this year. Opponents are hitting 248 against him. And that's something to consider, too. Granted, he's thrown more innings than anybody else, but he's given up extra base hits with a much higher regularity than his opponents. What's interesting, Dylan Eskew started out as the Friday night guy, and he worked a few weeks. They ended up moving him back some, but he got hit in the head. Crazy stuff, man. They're getting loose out there, and in batting practice, somebody hits a shot. It gets over the fence, and it hits this kid in the head. And as he falls, he injures himself. So it's not just a concussion. He also, I understand, sustained an oblique injury. So we talk about being snake bit. Your Friday night guy is getting ready to pitch and gets plunked in the head, and now he hadn't pitched in a while, and he's not expected to pitch this weekend. 5 appearances, 5 starts. He's got an 0-1 record. An ERA of 1.77, but he was the guy they expected to be a real dude for them this year. And now he's been unavailable. Expected to come back, but again, you may get over the concussion quicker than you get over the oblique injury. I mean, it's just nuts, man. I mean, you're getting ready to go play in a ball game and you get plunked in the head with a baseball that's probably hit 100-plus miles an hour. And it's not enough to get knocked out, but then you hurt yourself and you got to miss a month. I guess this will be the third consecutive week that he has not been in the order. But, that's a very difficult circumstance, to say the least. Now, they've got some other guys they'll move around a little bit, and basically they've left Sunday as a TBA. Now, part of that is because they may have to use Brandon Stone in relief in one of these games. And Brandon Stone's a guy that's got a couple of starts for him, too. And then there's Matthew Becker as well, too. He could be a Sunday guy, but they're going to leave their options open, basically just kind of building all that around who they need in relief. So if there's a competitive game, they got to go all in and try to win. They may throw a guy that is potentially the starter for Sunday. So we've been in those situations before. You got to see how Friday and Saturday work out before you make a decision. But, again, Matthew Becker and Brandon Stone are guys that could also potentially start. And we'll see how things go. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe. They even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, AURA.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at Aura.com. Looking at the offensive numbers here, it has not been a great year offensively. They're hitting .285 as a team. And Nathan Hall, it's interesting. There are some people in my profession that absolutely drive me crazy. It's true. So Nathan Hall had been the leadoff hitter for much of the year. And he is the leading hitter, hitting .383. He got 44 hits. I mean, leads them in most statistical categories. Right there with Ethan Petrie, you know. And so they like to move him down from the one hole to the three hole to give him an opportunity to hit with runners on base. I think it was North Carolina game. He opened up with a solo home run to start the game. So your best hitter is hitting leadoff, and some people think that's the way to go. The problem is that more times than not, he's hitting with nobody on base because they've really struggled to get people on base this year, especially ahead of him. And so they've dropped him to the three hole. Now, about what makes my head hurt, Maneri probably spent 3 minutes on that in the Tuesday postgame presser. He spoke about it extensively. This is our thinking. This is our methodology here. We want to give him run-driving opportunities. So what do you think the first question was on Wednesday when they had their media availability to preview the Mississippi State Series? Yeah, it's about moving Hall from first to third. And the question itself says, are you just moving him because you want to give him more, you know, RBI opportunity? That's exactly what he said the night before. In a game that you covered, you attended the press conference, and then you opened the press conference the next day. The very first question is about something the coach spent 3 minutes on. And it's like, I just think to myself, I understand why so many coaches don't want to do media. I get it. I understand it. Can we ask real baseball questions? Can we ask stuff that we haven't, you know, asked and answered? It drives me crazy, man. It does. And I'm sure it drove Paul Maneri crazy, too, though he handled it like a gentleman. But nevertheless, Nathan Hall, expect him to be the three-hole hitter. Yeah, of course, they may change things up on Sunday if they get into a scenario where they're not scoring runs. And that's been a big issue this year. Scoring has not been a real strong suit for this team, especially against SEC competition. It feels like Ethan Petrie should be a doctor by now. Now, there was some discussion last year that he may go into the NCAA transfer portal. And there were some people in those circles, in those agency circles, that said, hey, this guy may have interest in Mississippi State. So it's a story that we tracked, but he elected to stay on at South Carolina. Of course, he had the coaching change. You weren't sure who they were going to hire. And that was probably the big first recruiting win for Paul Maneri at South Carolina to get Ethan to stay. He's hitting .370. 8 doubles, 8 home runs, and 27 RBI. He leads in home runs and RBI, just narrowly edging out Nathan Hall with 27 RBI. But I tell you, behind those two, there's just not a lot. There's not a lot you look at and say, you know what, hey, this is a guy that can go win us a ball game. Jordan Kerryon is a guy that has been pretty good too, but he's been more of a part-time starter. He started just 19 games, but he's hitting .352. Good chance we see him. I'm pretty sure he's a matchup guy. But from there, you know, it really begins to kind of dip among the regulars. You know, they only have those three guys hitting above .300 that are the regulars. Bo Hollins is a guy, too, started 16 games hitting .323. But you get a little bit deeper in this thing. I mean, you got some other guys out there like Nolan the Rocky, 11-game starter hitting .216. Dalton Mashore started a dozen games hitting .200. Talmadge LaCroix started 17 games, hitting .188. You know, and so they're just trying to mix and match and figure this thing out. They are a team that wants to run the bases a little bit. They haven't been extremely successful. We've had some difficulty controlling the running game here as of late, and that's not just about catchers. That's everybody involved, the pitchers, the catchers, everybody. But Nathan Hall, 9 of 11, and he has a third of their stolen bases. Petrie is not a real threat to go. Jordan Kerryon, 3 of 4. But as a team, 30 of 38 this year. Dalton Mashore is another guy, too, that will get on base and try to go a little bit. But by and large, you know, they want to run the bases, and they kind of run it by committee. But Nathan Hall is the most likely to go. And some of that, too, is being the leadoff hitter, trying to get in a scoring position for 3 and 4. But, yeah, that's one of those things you got to watch. You got to be able to kind of handle things. There are a team, too, that's been able to kind of elicit the double play ball from them. They've grounded into 22 of them. You got to get under barrels, and that's a big part of this game, too, is making them hit your pitch. And you got to feel like Justin Parker's probably got some insight into some of these long-standing hitters about what they do well, what they don't do well. And Ethan Petrie is a guy that last year was just absolutely phenomenal. One of the best hitters in the Southeastern Conference. And so that's kind of a building block for them, but they just have not found kind of the supporting cast around them. Again, this is a lineup that hits 285, but you look at the strikeout numbers, they're putting the ball in play for the most part. But 211 strikeouts and 980 at-bats. You know, so you're right there around 20%, which isn't terrible. But this is a team, too, that just hasn't really found a sense of itself. On-base percentage is a team less than 400. You know, just kind of part of the deal. Now, they will move runners around. You know, they do like to bunt a little bit. They got a handful of guys that will get a sack bunt down to kind of move a runner. And when you're an offensively challenged club, you got to take advantage of everything you have, especially when you got guys that aren't hitting the baseball well. Looking back to it, Jarvis Evans, we talked about him. We faced him last year, and I will detail that out in our Saturday starter preview. But he went 4 1/3 of an inning against us, 3 hits, 2 runs. Struck out 5, walked just 2, and we win the ballgame 6-1. And so we'll see him again. That's a guy that's somewhat familiar with us, even though the lineup has changed, but he only threw out at 68 pitches. But, yeah, that's another guy. We've got some book on him and have had some success against him, though not a lot. I mean, just 3 hits over 4 innings, you know, that's not always a great thing. But we're able to get the victory there, and a lot of it, too, is because of how well we pitched in that ballgame. I mean, you know, that's what you need. You know, you need the Pico Cones of the world, you know, to go out there and give you a good outing. And that was against Cal Steepman, you know. So that's, you know, former Friday night guy that's moved to Saturday. And there are a lot of coaches out there that like to have their best pitcher go on Saturday. A lot of people believe game 2 is the most important game of a series, because either you're trying to set up to win the series, or you're trying to level the series and force a rubber game. They're just, that's the methodology that some guys have. And so, you know, I share that with you because, again, that's going to be a name you know. But the South Carolina portal class, even last year at first blush, just wasn't very good. You look at it and say, you know, who are they getting? You know, and that's what happens when you go out and get these guys. Then you got to go play games with them. Let's look at some SEC numbers here, too. Looking at batting average, SEC, you know, the leading hitter has been Henry Kaggsmeier, hitting .423 against SEC pitching. They're hitting .303 as a club, so slightly a little bit better, and some of that, too, is because you kind of begin to settle the lineup a little bit. You know, in those gaudy games when you mercy rule, you know, the Louisiana School for Math and Science, you know, you're going to let those freshman guys go out there and get hacks, and sometimes they don't. But it's just interesting to kind of look through here. They've got, you know, maybe 5 or 6 guys that have started almost every game. K.J. Scobie is a guy that's started all 9 games, hitting just .278. But they've only hit 7 home runs in SEC play. They've allowed 21. That's not winning baseball. You know, and you go back and you look at these numbers, and you know, that's kind of how it looks, right? 94 hits, they're putting the ball in play. They've only allowed 97 hits, but they've given up a ton of extra base hits. They've allowed 21 home runs, as I mentioned, but 14 doubles and a triple. And so when you put those numbers together, South Carolina in SEC play has a total of 20 extra base hits, and they've given up almost 40. You know, and so pitching's been a bit of a problem, but also being singles hitters is a bit of a problem too. They have also hit some hitters, and that's one of the things tonight that's kind of been a big issue with Jake McCoy. And looking at pitching numbers, Jarvis Evans, 2 starts in SEC play, and he has no record, 2 no decisions. He's gone 9 innings, 9 hits, 5 runs, all of them earned, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, ERA at 5. And again, that's your best pitcher, and you get an SEC play, and he's got a 5 ERA. Matthew Becker, a guy that's got 4 appearances and 1 start, we mentioned him, ERA of 9.64. Brandon Stone, 0-3, 3 appearances, 2 starts, and taking a loss in all of them, ERA of 9.82. Jake McCoy, tonight's starter, 1-2 record, ERA of 10.24. He's worked 9.2 innings and really works about 4 innings per start. Has allowed 19 SEC hits, 20 runs, 11 of them earned, walked 7, struck out just 10. And so, and again, that's the scenario you're in where you're having to move basically your Sunday starter into your Friday starting role over the course of about 3 weeks. And it's tough. I mean, he's a guy, number one, that last year, ERA of almost 8 is a freshman. And he is a very talented sophomore. And pitching's just been such a challenge for them. So, you know, we're going to have to go out here and get at him. And, you know, you'd like to be able to score some runs the first time through the order. Last thing you want is a team like this to feel like they have a chance, starting to believe a little bit. So, you know what you're going to get from Pico. But you'd like to be able to get some separation early in this game. But I love the mercy rule games because everybody can kind of sit back and relax. But I don't know if that helps us tonight. And what I mean by that is I want them to burn through some arms. Burn some arms today. You know, you want to be able to maybe have a 3 or 4 run lead and you're still in the game if you're South Carolina. And so maybe you don't use your elite bullpen arms, but you use some guys that you're going to burn for the weekend. In 21, when we went to South Carolina, we won that series. And everybody was talking about how great their starting pitching was, and we rocked them. But what happened, because we got some separation in both Friday and Saturday, they saved their best 2 bullpen arms for Sunday trying to salvage a game, and we couldn't complete the sweep. And we still should have. We certainly should have. If I remember correctly, we had an error throwing the ball from third to first that would have got us out of an inning that allowed them to get the lead. But so that's kind of what happens. You want the game to be within reach later in the ball game, and then maybe you extend late, right? You want them to have to build a bullpen around a guy that they can't just save for Sunday. You want guys to come out and pitch tonight. And, of course, you know, we feel like Pico can give us 6 or 7 good innings. But we'd like to be able to get some separation early, but not too much, because I don't want them throwing back of the bullpen guys and being able to save guys. Love for us to be able to do that, wouldn't you? Yeah, sure. It's all part of the deal. But this bullpen has not been good. South Carolina's record when trailing after 7 is 0-7. And again, that says a lot about, number one, teams able to get separation in the middle innings, but also, two, their inability to close games. They do have it's an interesting dynamic here. Tyler Pitzer has a save in SEC play. And so you look at that's probably the guy that they would want with the ball late. But then you look at what he did in non-conference play. No other saves. So 0 saves in non-conference play. They have pieced a few things together. Brandon Sweeney here has 4 saves, and those have longly been in a little bit longer relief. You know, he's made I guess that's not true. Yeah, he's made a dozen appearances working about an inning per. And so, you know, we'll see some of these guys eventually. And Sweeney's even started a game. But 0-2 record with a 5.68 ERA. So that's all part of the deal, too. You want them to use some of their primary arms today and tomorrow and not save them for Sunday. Because you know how Sundays can be in the Southeastern Conference. It gets a little crazy when it's all said and done. It does. Sometimes it turns into a bit of a church league softball game. Now, look at fielding numbers for these guys, too, 974. And, guys, we haven't fielded it well either, and you guys know that. And I think that's one of the things you got to look at primarily at second base. I don't know why second base has been such of an issue for us, but it has been. And we've tried 4 different guys starting there. And at some point, all of them have made some errors. And so, you know, that's the thing you got to think about with Sawyer Reeves. Where does he fit, you know? And that's not to mention the errors, and I'm not talking about Sawyer specifically, but just kind of in general. You know, even the game against Memphis on Tuesday, you know, you have a couple of errors early. You had other couple plays that weren't scored errors. They were, like, you throw the ball in the center field on a pickoff at second, and then the runner doesn't advance because he's sliding back into the bag, you know. Those are miscues like that that will hurt you, not just in regular play, but certainly in SEC play. So we got to get it going. No if, ands, or buts about it. We got to get it going. This is a great weekend, an opportunity for us to do so. And I hope we get back on Monday. We're talking about a glorious weekend because there's a lot riding on this weekend. A lot riding on this weekend, as you guys are well aware. I mean, this is, you lose this series here, you know, there is no NIT for baseball. You know, you say, well, there's still mathematically a chance, but realistically, this is one of those home series that you simply have to get. You simply have to. And next week, of course, we're on the road for all four games. You know, we're going to head over to UAB. And, you know, we're playing a lot of those non-conference games away this year. It's true. Those midweek games, you know, and of course, those are supposed to help us in the RPI. And, you know, UAB is a team, too, that they live for these things. They live for these midweek games. So we're at UAB next week on Tuesday, and then we will turn around and head to Tuscaloosa for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so this is going to be one of the last opportunities to see, you know, the Bulldogs for a little bit. You know, the next time we're back in action is on tax day. You know, so you need to be at Duty Noble this weekend. And then, of course, you know, we'll have Florida come in that weekend. So we'll have four of those games at home. But it feels like we have been on the road forever. It does. It feels like it has been a long time since we have played a weekend series at home. And, of course, you got to go all the way back to Texas. But, yeah, when you have those back-to-back weekends on the road, it's tough for everybody. And it's kind of part of the scheduling formula. But we've got to kind of overcome those deficits. And that's the thing you look back to. Every one of you feels like I do, right? And what I mean by that is we won the Friday night game at Oklahoma against their best pitcher, Kyson Witherspoon. And then we thought, well, we'll be able to get at least one more. And we certainly should have. And we rock cross one. But, of course, we go out there and give them a 7-0 lead and then come back and take a lead and then blow the lead, right? And I think everybody feels like we should have won that Saturday game. Then you get into Sunday, it's a similar situation. You have your chances, but you don't take advantage of it. Let's go back to last week against LSU. You got a 6-2 lead on Friday. In the fifth inning, and you scored in every inning so far. You're just kind of, we're expanding the lead, right? A chance to knock them out. We give up 5 runs in the bottom of 5 and ultimately lose the game. They use their best bullpen arm and they end up beating us. We should have won the game. I mean, you make a couple plays defensively, you win the game. Friday, we lose 2-1 in a game that we lose 12 on base. LSU left 4 on base. We couldn't pitch it any better than we did. And then we lose because of a pair of solo home runs and a lot of missed opportunities. And so we're in this position mainly because of our own issues. I think everybody would agree with that. And they give LSU credit for making the plays to win. But, you know, a couple swings here and there, you know, we could be 4-5. I think that's a fair assessment. And maybe even 5-4. I mean, the games are there to win. We got to go win them. And they got to start this weekend. And we kind of put our backs against the wall here. I'm eager to see how we respond. Since we haven't had a game since our last show, we're going to do our player to watch this weekend. The player to watch is brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Phone number 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Blair says mortgage rates may be coming down with the recent economic climate in our country. Now may be a good time to consider a refi. Maybe you're looking to get into a home for the first time or maybe buy a game day condo in Starkville. Now's a good time to maybe inquire about that. Visit Blair at closewithblair.com. 24 years of experience. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. He knows how to construct loans to give you the best chance to get through underwriting and get to the closing table. Thus the name closewithblair.com. And so our player to watch this weekend, and I think because of the fact that they're expected to start 2 left-handers, will be a right-handed hitter. I'm going to go with Noah Sullivan. I think Noah Sullivan has an opportunity to be an impact player for us this weekend. With them throwing 2 left-handers, and of course you get in the bullpen, things change a little bit. I think that'll negate some of the offensive influence of the left-handed hitters. And so some of the burden's got to fall to the right side. So I'm going to pick Noah Sullivan as your player to watch this weekend. We need him to have a big weekend, and I think he'll have the opportunity to do that. eager to see how we, you know, kind of fill out the lineup too. You know, does he hit three? Does he hit four? You know, we'll see. But, you know, Aaron Downs is a guy too that may see a couple of starts this weekend as we kind of platoon times out in left field. And of course, Garrett Fry is a switch hitter, so you may see him a little bit too. But again, I think Noah Sullivan is a guy that starts all three games and has the ability to have some impact on each of those three games. So again, close the Blairs. Player to watch this weekend, Noah Sullivan. Time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by Koleto Guitars. If you're looking for a guitar, and chances are you should be, whether you're looking to pick it up or to upgrade your current rig, the way to go is Koleto Guitars. This is a Mississippi State-owned and operated business. Out of Lake Jackson, Texas, just south of Houston, you can visit them at KaletoGuitars.com. That's C-A-L-I-D-O, guitars.com. And if you want to go by and check out the show place next time you're in the Houston area, just hit them up on Google, and you can go by there and take a look at all of the fine selections available to you there. You can also call and get your questions answered over the phone. 979-297-4733. Absolutely incredible selection, incredible service, and they're giving you an incredible incentive to buy from them and to help Mississippi State at the same time. So look through their selection of high-quality instruments, take advantage of their exemplary customer service and their expertise and know-how, and when you do buy a guitar from Koleto Guitars, you get 10% off. That's free shipping and no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. In addition to that, a 5% donation will be made to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund. So you're not just helping the guitar player in your life or yourself, you're helping Mississippi State. And it's not just guitars. Maybe you don't need a new rig, but you need a gig bag. You need all the accessories. You need strings, all the good stuff there. Maybe you need some Ernie Ball Super Slinkies. And you can get all that information from them. Again, Koleto Guitars, C-A-L-I-D-O, guitars.com. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. So very proud to partner with our friends at Koleto Guitars. Okay, Tough. That's your top 10 list today. I've got a connection to this band through a friend, Benny Bruce. And Benny has been on my heart lately, and I felt the need to kind of reach out. I hadn't talked to him, man, in years. But Benny, one of the most talented people that I've ever known, he watched the Penelope Spheris documentary, The Decline of Western Civilization, Part 2, The Metal Years, and he saw the band Tough, and he's like, hey, I want to go join that band. I want to go help them make it. At the time, they were a four-piece. He is credited on their Wikipedia page as being a touring musician from 88 to 90. I don't know if it was quite that long. But nevertheless, Benny went for it. Benny sold everything he owned, packed everything into a Chevy S10 pickup truck with a camper shell on the back, and he moved out to California. I've had some interaction with Stevie Rochelle, and he said that, you know, Stevie, the lead singer of Tough, said that Benny lived with them for a while, and it was an American dream. And I have so much respect for Benny for, you know, when taking a chance. How many people have said, you know what, I want to make it? Well, he wasn't going to be discovered down there in Slidell, Louisiana. And so Benny took the show on the road, went out to Hollywood, tracked down the band, convinced them to hire him. And next thing you know, he's part of the band Tough. They eventually parted ways, and then Tough came out with their debut album, What Comes Around Goes Around. But I just wanted to share that with you guys. You guys may know Benny from his work with the Molly Ringwalds. So back when I was with Cervello, Benny's band Reality opened for Ocelot. We were based out of Baton Rouge. They were based out of Slidell. So it just made for a convenient pairing. They eventually moved on from their singer, Byron. They changed the name to Pencils and Crayons and eventually Crush UK. And then finally decided to just be a bit of a novelty act and kind of an 80s, you know, cover band. And they became the Molly Ringwalds. And again, Benny, one of the most talented people I've ever known. And I just wanted to share that with you guys. I've reached out to him today, looking to kind of catch up. And I understand, you know, he's working through some things like all of us, but I've had an interesting life, and I've met some interesting people, and I don't know if I've known more people more interesting than Benny Bruce. And so I share that with you as our precursor to our top 10 list today. Now, Tuff kind of came around at the wrong time. And to be fair, too, Tuff was kind of, they were kind of a flash in the pan. And what I mean by that is they were kind of trying to be, you know, ride the wave of the tempest that Poison and Motley Crue and bands like that created. So they were a bit of a glam band. And when the album came out in 1990, music was just about to change. And so, you know, they were dropped by labels, picked up by others. But nevertheless, I put together a list of 10 good songs I think that you'll dig. Number 10, I like this one. And had I been their A&R manager, I think I probably would have made this a single. It's a track called Ain't Worth a Dime. And, you know, a lot of us, we go through these, you know, bouts of self-worthiness and things of that nature. But there are other things that happen in our life. Sometimes people enter our lives and don't add real value either. And that song is kind of like that. Number 9, Forever Yours. It kind of goes for, you know, what you think. But it's more of an upbeat, up-tempo, poppy type track. It's not the sappy ballad. That also is from What Comes Around Goes Around. The lead track on that album is called Rucka Pit Bridge. I don't know the story behind it, but it starts off kind of cool, and it's kind of got a familiar sound to it. And again, a lot of it was homogenized. A lot of the 80s rock, the last gasp of the hair metal era, kind of included Tuff. But that's kind of part of it, too, that Rucka Pit Bridge. So much stuff kind of began to sound the same. Everybody began to kind of look the same. It got really cookie cutter. And I'm not taking, you know, any shots at Stevie Richelle and Tuff or any of those guys. But I think a lot of people were kind of like, you know, I'm just kind of ready for something new. And I think corporate rock knew that. And so they began to kind of reach into dip into Seattle. But what's interesting, too, is everybody wanted to run to Seattle like it was the new Haight-Ashbury. And bands like Soundgarden and Pearl Jam were already on the road. Mud Love Bone, the Melvins, those bands were already established. You know, and so you go to Seattle thinking, hey, I want to go watch Alice in Chains and Soundgarden play, and they're in New York. You know, they were on world tours at that time. So it was an interesting time in music, and bands like Tuff kind of became casualties of the shift. Number 7, Better Off Dead. I think that's another fun one for you. Number 6, a cool one, The All New Generation. And this was another one of those songs that a lot of people kind of got behind, you know, and because every generation thinks their generation is the one of change. Really hadn't been this been the case, you know. You go back to and you think about, you know, the generations that preceded us, right? I mean, you know, they called them the greatest generation because they won World War II and saved the world. And, you know, then you had the hippies, and, you know, the 70s were kind of a weird time. And then the 80s were a great time for the United States. A lot of great stuff in culture and movie and music. Stuff just stands the test of time. And, of course, we're part of that generation. A lot of people say, well, what's the deal with Gen X? You know, well, we're just chilling, man. That's what we're doing. You know, I love those videos, too, when people say, why don't we give Gen X a pass? And it's like, hey, we were latchkey generation kids, man. We fought in person, not on the internet. You know, it's a much different deal. It's amazing today that people can be famous by being YouTubers. That's just amazing to me. But to each their own. All right, number 5. This one starts out a little, almost a little folksy, and then kind of builds a little bit, but it's a track called Who the Hell Am I? I think you'll dig that one too. And, you know, that is not worth. That's not off of the What Comes Around Goes Around album. That's one of those ones that's a little bit deeper into the catalog, for sure. All right, number 4. The lead track off the band Fist, off the album Fist First, and it was re-released under a different title later, but the original title was Fist First. But it's a track called Tied to the Bells. I really dig this one. I think it's one that you really enjoy. If you like 80s rock, this will scratch you where you itch, truly. And this is a very, very 80s band. Now, even though they came out of the 90s, this is a very, 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 very 80s band. All right, back to What Comes Around Goes Around. And one of my favorite tracks on this album. It's kind of buried as the last track, but it's Good Guys Were Black. You know, and again, that's just kind of part of the deal, right? It seemed like everybody back in those days wore, it's like people like, well, everybody wears leggings today. Well, people wore leggings in the 80s too, but they were generally on stage, you know. And they wore big spike boots and things like that. Things a little bit different. But Good Guys Wear Black, good track. Kind of reminds me, too, a little bit of the forerunner of the Cowboys from Hell lyric, you know, when it says, good guys wear black, you know. But it's, I think he's actually saying legends wear black. It's true. Now, one of the coolest songs in the catalog, it's not a cover, but it's kind of a parody of a Kid Rock song, which, of course, sampled Metallica's Sad But True. This is a great, great song. And when we did Rock Vegas at Hobie's downtown, this was part of our pre-show soundtrack. It's American Hair Band from Tough. And it is absolutely a fun song, and he talks about that. I went platinum zero times. I like people that can have a little fun and poke fun at themselves, not in a self-loathing way, but to kind of be honest about themselves. But American Hair Band is great, and they take some shots at Eddie Vedder and grunge music, and it's very apropos, shall we say. Yeah, looking up there, just standing up on stage, looking at your shoes, your dirty flannel shirt. And then that part where he says, you just can't mess with, and then he says, Twisted Sister. And then they break into, we're not going to take it. It's great. It's a wild ride. So if you're my age or you just like that genre of music, you need to know American Hair Band from Tough. It is a great, great song. But number one, and it reached number three on the Dial MTV charts. You guys remember that? We used to call in and request our favorite videos, and then around 5 o'clock they would play the top 10 Dial MTV tracks, and it made it to number three. And I love the track, and it's one of those songs too that kind of stays with me. It's got that big 80s chorus, but the song is I Hate Kissing You Goodbye. Man, story of my life, man. You know, it's like I'm constantly going somewhere, and I love traveling, but man, I hate going by myself. I do. And I remember when Dana and I first started dating, you know, you kind of get to know each other's past and kind of people, you know, and things like that. And so she got to meet, on our very first date, she got to meet Benny Bruce and Nick Minnelli and Sparky Lane and those guys that were in, I guess they were still technically Crush UK then. I can't remember. But anyway, our very first date, we went to Paparazzi's in Baton Rouge to see them play. And at the time, I was putting another band together and just went down to see them. And it's interesting. I remember Benny, like, going after a guy. Like, it was a guy that was a little bit inebriated. And he said something to Benny's girlfriend, and Benny walked off stage and walked the guy out. It was crazy. And I remember, too, dancing at that club, and this girl came up to dance with me that knew me from my Sabello days, and Dana, your favorite float spa hostess, stepped in, and I kind of had a feeling that maybe she was the one, you know, true story. But yeah, so Benny's been a part of my life, and even though we haven't really, you know, talked in many years, I've never forgotten that story. And I think a lot of him, and hopefully we can reconnect here in the days to come. I texted him earlier this morning. And again, I know he's kind of dealing with some things right now, and been on my heart. And I think that's one of these things, too, that I encourage you to do. Sometimes these people will kind of re-enter your consciousness. And I don't mean your exes, okay? So don't go do that, right? But check on your friends. You never know what they're dealing with. I mean, I firmly believe that we are all connected. And when you've got a friend, maybe perhaps it's dealing with something, I think in some ways you kind of know. You kind of have this sixth sense of sorts. And maybe that's weird, and I don't mean for it to be. But let me encourage you to check on your friends. And I got some friends that I've seen recently when I went down to Baton Rouge, you know, some people that were part of my past. And, you know, you see and hear things sometimes that kind of trouble you. And I am the one that's willing to open that dialogue. And you know, a lot of people say, you know, it's not my business. Well, you know, I think maybe it is. And maybe your friends are kind of want you to make it their business. Because a lot of times when people are struggling, they need to know they have an ally. because you build up these walls around you and you're like, I'll just deal with it. I'll just deal with it. I'll just deal with it. And then somebody comes along and says, you know, you don't really have to deal with all this. You know, you don't have to live this way. And so, again, it's so important to let people know that we care about them. It is the easiest thing we can do, and perhaps the most important thing we do is to let people know that we care about them. True story. True story. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Campus Bookmart has everything you need for the Mississippi State fans in your life and for yourself. You need to buy yourself something every once in a while, too. You don't just work to pay for everything else, right? Order something for somebody else, get something for yourself. I mean, that's typically what I do, too. I mean, it is. You got to treat yourself every now and again. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. Campus Bookmart has the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in and on universe, whether it be apparel, gift ideas, diploma frames, or everything you need to outfit your fan cape or decorate your vehicle or get tailgating supplies. You can find everything you need at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town, we encourage you to support a Starkville business. Visit them at campusbookmart.net, courtesy of Al Gore's Internet. At campusbookmart.net, promo code BSR. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Again, that's Campus Bookmart, your one-stop shop for Mississippi State merch. Okay, since we have begun recording this show, Mississippi State has now announced that Saturday's game against South Carolina will start at noon. That also moves up the Ron Polk Ring of Honor ceremony. That was originally scheduled for 9:30. Will now happen at 8 a.m. Gates will open at 7:30. Of course, Mitch Moreland, Yard Dog Ted Milton, Mike Proffitt going into the Ring of Honor. So if you're in town, we encourage you to come out. I know that requires an earlier alarm these days, but we encourage you to come out and be a part of that. We'll be there to provide you full coverage. Excited about that, certainly. Yeah. So 6 p.m. tonight and then noon tomorrow. No change to Sunday yet. So it does appear right now it'll be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series as opposed to a couple of sevens on Sunday. You know, and that's what we'd want. We need to get all three of these games in. We need to win all three of these games. Worst case scenario, you get two, but we really need to get all three of them. We need to play. We need to win. Need to improve our standing in the world. Let's look around the league here a little bit. As you guys are well aware, South Carolina will be here. Very interesting game last night. I don't know if you guys watched it. I'm a college baseball nerd. And so when I get a chance to watch some baseball against SEC teams, I typically want to watch that. And the game last night between Oklahoma and LSU in Norman, a little bit chilly up there, but man, that thing was over, it felt like, in about, you know, 70 minutes. I mean, they just cruised right through it. Just 11 hits in the ball game. It ends up being a 2-0 ball game. It's Cade Anderson, a guy that we kind of knocked around the park a little bit. He goes the distance. 9 innings pitched. That's probably your SEC pitcher of the week, the first game of the weekend. 14 strikeouts, and guys, he threw like 130 pitches. It's crazy. But he looked just as strong in the ninth as he did maybe in the fifth. And so LSU gets the opening series win now. Oklahoma ranked 10th, LSU 7th. So again, we've played a lot of top 10 teams, and as has South Carolina. But all that understood, a pretty big night for Luis Hernandez. First baseman, catcher, transferred in from Indiana State. He's been behind the dish. He goes 2-for-3 last night, a couple of doubles. Sam Christensen, the right fielder, didn't have a good weekend against us, but he did hit the one home run that really got them going on Sunday. He goes 2-for-3 in the ballgame. So LSU, big start, and they beat Kyson Witherspoon. As you guys know, that Oklahoma pitching staff, the depth is not great. They're a team that I think they'll piece it together and be just good enough. But, man, I tell you, it's going to be an interesting year for Oklahoma. The longer they go in SEC play, I think they're going to drop by the top 10 and come back closer to the pack. Oklahoma will have the home field advantage. But I tell you, last night there were a lot of LSU fans there, and I think a lot of it's the novelty of the first time ever being the visiting team at a new SEC venue. same reasons I wanted to go. A lot of LSU people went. A lot of Tigers sitting behind home plate last night. Be a busy day in the league. Ole Miss and Kentucky will play two today. First pitch for game one, set for 2 o'clock. That'll be Hunter Elliott against Nate Harris. Hunter Elliott's had a really good year, a return to form after missing some extensive time to recover from Tommy John. Still think he probably should have had the surgery earlier on, but it is what it is. The second game, scheduled for 6:30, but you know how these things work. Vanderbilt is in Florida. I told you guys some time ago, Vanderbilt is not for real. It'll be an interesting weekend in Gainesville. Florida still working through a ton of injuries, but this Vanderbilt team, I think, is just good. I don't think they're really good. I don't think they're great. They're 21-8, but 4-5 in league play. And they're a team, you look at them, I'm just going to say that for what it is. If we play up to our potential, they're a team I think that we can surpass. I think they're going to be less than 500 in SEC play when it's all said and done. Wish we'd play them this year. But nevertheless, they got to go to Gainesville. It's never fun to go play in Gainesville. We should have won that series last year. I feel like I've said that a million times. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, with Colby Shelton swing it against that Vanderbilt lineup, what happens, you know. I don't know the Vanderbilt offense is enough to outscore Florida, but I think the Vanderbilt pitching staff can make this game, these series, interesting. Texas A&M is at Tennessee. You know, it's like just when things can't get any worse, right? We were preseason number one. This is one of those series a lot of people kind of, you know, put a check mark to beginning of the year. It's, man, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I don't think it's going to be. I think Tennessee will run absolute roughshod over Texas A&M. The Aggies currently 14-14 and 1-8 in the league, going up against the number one team in the country in a ballpark at Lindsey Nelson that is built for offense. And Tennessee will face a good rotation. The situation, though, is that A&M just hadn't been able to score. See, I like Tennessee to take this series, and I think that they will probably sweep the series. And, you know, if you're Texas A&M and you're Trev Albert, do you start thinking about a coaching change? I think you do. And I'm sure that contract was probably very one-sided. You know, it was almost like a Zach Arnett situation, to be honest with you. It's like, hey, you know, we don't want to lose what we have. And so we don't want Jim Schlossnagel getting Jay Slavulet and all these guys to transfer down to Texas. So we got to do what we got to do. And so they made the rash decision, and now they're paying for it. And I think A&M probably comes open, and Mike is probably a hitting coach with someone else next year. Could be Texas. Who knows? But nevertheless, I think there's a tough weekend ahead for A&M. A tough year and a tough weekend. Big series down in Auburn as Alabama and Auburn get together. Alabama probably better than many people anticipated. I think some of this is the product of the schedule. I think they are another team that'll be a really good team, but I think they're going to come back to earth here in the weeks ahead. Going to Auburn with Cooper McMurray, one of my favorite players in the league that nobody talks about. You know, he hurt us last year. We went down there and should have won the series. You guys are well aware. The game we won, we had the big lead, then had to hang on game two. But Cooper McMurray is a guy, too. I think Cooper is a guy with Ike Irish that can make some good things happen for Auburn. I will not be surprised if Auburn wins this weekend being at home. But I'm a little bit hesitant to make that call. But let's just go ahead and do it. I like Auburn in a bit of an upset here at home. Justin LeBron, of course, one of the favorites for the Player of the Year. I think it's even Jay Slavulet, even though he's probably the first pick in the draft, I think the bloom is off the rose a little bit when you consider how bad A&M is playing. Georgia at Texas, a top five matchup. And Georgia's on fire right now, 29-2, 8-1 in the league. One of the favorites. A huge series right here. We don't play Georgia. So if we're thinking RPI, we're rooting for Texas. Think about it. Yeah, we need Texas to win this series because I think every RPI point is going to matter for us. And I'll be honest with you, I was not overly impressed with Texas when we played them. As you guys know, we should have taken the series, and we didn't. We just swept. But you had a chance in every one of those games, and that's where State's got to get over the hump. But playing in Austin, it'll be capacity crowds. Yeah, Robbie Burnett's already got 15 tanks, and of course it helps to play in a small ballpark like they do, but Georgia has had some power on the road. But it'll be awfully interesting, this series. And, you know, Georgia could go down there and clean their clocks. I don't know if Texas offensively has enough to kind of run with them. You know, we got after Jared Spencer a little bit too. The Texas bullpen was really good against us. But that'll be an interesting series. But I'm rooting for Texas, but I'm going to take Georgia in this one. LSU and Oklahoma, we've already talked about that a little bit. That'll be interesting today. Be 6 p.m. And then Missouri's at Arkansas. Missouri 11-17 overall and 0-9 in the conference. Yeah, I had somebody beginning of the year and said, Steve, they won't win six conference games. And you look at this thing and you begin to wonder, they're going to win any conference games. That's always interesting when you kind of work through the numbers there and you begin to kind of wonder about, you know, it could always be worse, I guess, right? You could be Missouri. And one of the things that I've heard about Missouri is like the rev share thing, like that they're allocating maybe a higher percentage to men's basketball and less to baseball for a lot of our programs, right? I mean, like most people are kind of following the same model, but it looks like Missouri is going to do a little more for men's basketball. Mississippi State currently, we're middle of the pack hitting 313 as a team. And only played 22 games. But you're just kind of running through the numbers here. LSU, the top offensive team in the conference at 345. We got them behind us. And again, I think to myself, you know, because it's like you get to look at the totality of things. This LSU team, I think, okay, yes, they're hitting almost 350 as a team. And we should have taken the series. That's how it feels. And so you begin to think about there's a big enough sample size now. And then you think about Arkansas is the number two offense in the conference, so we don't play them. Florida will be here in a couple weeks. They're hitting 320. Alabama's hitting 319. We play them next weekend. And then there's Tennessee. We don't play them. Go to Auburn in a few weeks. They're hitting 320. Georgia hitting 315. We don't play them. And there's us. And Oklahoma's hitting 299. They're 14 points behind us. And again, a series we feel like we should have won, and we should have. But we have a lot of the offenses that are struggling a little bit. We don't get A&M, obviously. But when you think about a lot of these teams to come, offensively, are behind us. Kentucky's hitting 293. We'll see them. We've already played Texas, Missouri hitting 289. South Carolina, we'll see this week, and they're tied with Ole Miss hitting 283. Vanderbilt, again, offensively, it's a bit of a challenge there, 281. We don't play them, and A&M's at 256. But we've got some teams ahead of us. They're at least around us or behind us offensively. And so I think in many respects, we have played some of the best offenses that we're going to play this year. Now, looking at earned run average, and this is one of those things, again, I see these people being critical of Justin Parker. Now, has Justin made some decisions that I disagreed with or some decisions that have backfired? Yes, but it hasn't been a ton. As it stands today, Mississippi State is third in the Southeastern Conference in earned run average. Now, some of that, too, is because we've booted the ball around a little bit, but here's the thing I think that you'll find interesting. Tennessee, 229, number one, without any question. Batting average against is .190. You know what batting average against Mississippi State pitchers is? Do you know? You want to take a stab at that? It's .183, which is the lowest in the Southeastern Conference. Oh, you didn't know? It's true. The lowest batting average against in the Southeastern Conference comes against Mississippi State. We just don't give up many hits. And you're like, well, that can't be right. But it is. It's right. Now, it takes more than just that. You know, Texas A&M's got an ERA of 3.06. They're just slightly ahead of us. That'll change. If we play like we're supposed to play this weekend and Tennessee plays like we expect them to play, there's a good chance that we are number two in the SEC in earned run average next week. Could happen tonight. But let that sink in for a second. Those of you that are hypercritical of Justin Parker, the best batting average against in the SEC is right here in Starkville, Mississippi. we talk about strikeouts and punchouts and that kind of stuff, and sometimes that's an elevated statistic. Tennessee. Everybody's like, hey, Tennessee has the best pitching staff in the SEC. I don't know if that's correct. I still think I would go A&M. But strikeouts for Tennessee, 264. And that's not even best in the conference. But you know what's interesting? Just right behind them is Mississippi State with 262. LSU is 273. Vanderbilt is 265. Florida is 265. So Mississippi State right there, fifth in the conference in strikeouts. It's all very interesting. Home runs allowed. You know, you start working through these numbers too. Tennessee, they're the best, number one team in the country. They allowed 13 home runs. Your Bulldogs allowed 14. LSU's allowed 12, even in that silo of a ballpark down there. Oklahoma's actually allowed the fewest, right there with Texas. Both of them have allowed 11. So Mississippi State, just three home runs allowed off the lead. And so I say this because I think sometimes we need the numbers here to kind of frame things up in a proper context. Lowest batting average against, not giving up a lot of big flies, still striking out at a very high percentage. Mississippi State has allowed 119 hits this year. That's it. The fewest of any SEC team. 119. And for those of you that wonder about such stuff, right, the number two team is allowed 126. That's Vanderbilt. So where's the rub, right, Steve? If we're middle of the pack offensively, and one of the best pitching staffs in the SEC, which in turn means you're one of the best in the country, what's the rub? What's fielding percentage? That's the issue. It's fielding. And even that is top half in the league. But that, I think we can all agree, how many pitches did we have to throw because we couldn't get an out or we couldn't turn a double play, right? We made some errors this year, 17 of them to be exact. And I read and I see so much of these things. You know, last year it was us in Arkansas, nip and tuck the whole way through. Is the most prolific defenses in the Southeastern Conference and in the country. Arkansas leads the SEC with just 10 errors. You want to talk about the difference between them and some of the teams behind them? That's it. You're getting good pitching, you're playing good defense, you're getting just enough offense. Vanderbilt's committed 12 errors, Auburn 14. Georgia, top five team, 16 errors. LSU, 15. Florida, 16. And again, Mississippi State there at 17. Worst team in the conference defensively? Texas A&M at 27. And just ahead of them is Ole Miss and Missouri with 25 errors apiece. And so the pieces are there for us to put this thing together. And you know what? Sometimes as a coach, you got to put somebody on the bench for the betterment of the team. I mean, that's just the reality of it. You know, when you've got guys that are consistently making errors, and it seems like so many of them come at second base, and that's not just to pick on Sawyer Reeves, even though he's had several. You know, just we had one, Gat Sanders, just on Tuesday. You know, we need somebody to lock down second base. Garrett Fry, when he had the opportunity, he booted the ball around too. And so that's an important aspect of this. And to be honest with you, second base is among the easiest places to play. Now, of course, you got to know how to handle all your defenses and play out the middle and things like that. I'm not saying that it's easy. Playing third may be the easiest. Outside of maybe playing first. You know, first, you got to dig a lot of balls out. A lot of opportunities and chances at first base. But third base, it's a much easier throw. Ball gets on you a little bit quicker. You got to react quicker. That's why they call it the high corner. But when you look at what we've done, you know, with errors and things of that nature, it's just one of those things, man, that just it kind of blows up. And you look at – we've been in all these close games. We're pitching it well enough. We seem to be getting enough hits, but not enough big hits. But the variable that's been with us is defense. And I think – I did the numbers here some time ago. At the time, I think we had 9 losses, and 6 of the 9 could be largely attributed to errors at second base. Got to shore that up. And maybe Gat's the answer. I don't know. But we talk about control of the running game, too. You know, we've only had three caught stealings, which is dead last, but it's not by much. You know, Georgia, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt right there at four. Tennessee and Alabama, five. But some of that's on pitchers. Some of it's on catchers. You know, it is a collaborative effort. It's interesting, too. Like, we talk about batters, you know, striking out, how State's got 262, which is fifth. More times than not, it's swing and miss. But State still eight strikeout looking. Tennessee, number one, strikeout looking. But it's so interesting to go through all of these numbers and kind of get inside the numbers. And you begin again to realize kind of where you are. And we talk about controlling a running game. State is actually a fourth, tied with Texas with five runners picked off. But all of it is very interesting. You know, I mean, it's like, a lot of times we only look at the record. Well, the record is comprised of a lot of different things. Runs allowed for Mississippi State, 77, which is fourth in the SEC. Just one out of second place. Vanderbilt and Arkansas are tied at 76. Tennessee, of course, number one at 64. Tennessee also number one with earned runs allowed, 48. Your Bulldogs tied for second with 63. And so I share this because I think it's important. When we're upset and when we're angry, we tend to just kind of, you know, just post and tweet and speak out of emotion. And no, I'm not ready to give up on the season. I know many of you are, and you're just ready for something new. I get it. I'm a Mississippi State guy through and through, and I'm going to pull for Mississippi State until the final out of the final game, the final pitch, every single game, regardless of who's making out the lineup card. But I wanted to share some numbers with you today to make you understand we're a lot closer than I think some people realize. You just want to win, right? Period. You're getting winning pitching. And you're going to have, in many respects, a very elite pitching staff from a number standpoint. No, we don't have the numbers that we did with maybe Cal Steven or Durangelo. We don't. But the pitching plan has been very good. And so you're going to have a very efficient pitching staff that doesn't give up a lot of hits or a lot of runs against an offense that struggles to do a little bit of both. They struggle to string hits together. They struggle to score runs. That's one of the things I think is so important to understand. We always talk about matchups. It's all about matchups. And I don't think that we're a great matchup for South Carolina. I think the other way around. I think they are very much a good matchup for us. They're currently 12th in the SEC in runs batted in. 12th. 13th in batting average. 15th in slugging percentage. 12th in on-base percentage. And again, some of that is even, you know, we talked about the non-conference schedule outside of Clemson. It really was not a non-conference schedule to speak of. And so I feel very good about the weekend. But we got to go out there and play. You know, the numbers don't win games, right? But the numbers kind of show trends and things of that nature. I think that's a very important aspect of things. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town. And if you're not, you should. We don't get together enough. We say it all the time, right? You need to be the linchpin in your friend or family group to make that change. You could make some memories you'll remember forever, right? It's cool. Have everybody under one roof. Maybe it's a college roommate's reunion. Maybe it's a cousin's reunion. Maybe it's just getting mom and dad out of the house and getting all the kids and grandkids under one roof and letting them just kind of enjoy the family that they've created and raised all these years. Book some special moments for yourself at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Whether it's a ball game weekend, maybe you got some vacation time you need to use, you can come in the middle of the week and enjoy some of your favorite Starkville restaurants without a lot of waiting, right? We'd love to have you here. Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page auto-populates. You can peruse all of the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. It's fabulous. Six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths. We've stayed there. Had a great time. as did all of my kids. And it was just so nice, too, to have everybody there. You know, it's game night. It's movie night. You get together and just kind of visit and get caught up. And everybody gets together and gathers in the kitchen and cook a meal. And then you sit down together. And those are the moments life is really made of, right? Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to pop up. You can have Airbnb, VRBO. You can go that route if you want to, but if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10, that's Beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you get to stay at the premier venue in the Golden Triangle. And it's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. If you're coming for a ballgame weekend, you can do your tailgating right then and there. Just save some time, too. Because you know as well as I do, it's such a commitment of time to get all that stuff up there. And maybe, you know what, hey, with everybody coming to town, I'd rather spend time with my kids. You know what I'm saying? Right. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Okay. A lot of outgoing traffic these days with basketball. And that's, I was talking to the bride about that earlier today. You know, it's like, as soon as a season ends, we got to deal with portal stuff, right? I mean, immediately. And the outgoing traffic happens first. So as we mentioned on the Wednesday show, you know, Riley Kugel, the latest Bulldog to go in, there has been some changes on the women's side too as Medina Okod goes in today. And I'm not sure what that's about. I don't follow women's basketball as closely as some others do. At the end of the day, the story didn't really matter. She's gone, and I really hope we'd get her back. I know you guys did too. She's a bit of a fan favorite. You know, DeBrisha Poe was another. But, yeah, on the women's side, we've had DeBrisha Poe, Shakira Edwards, Anisha Carrere, and now Medina Okot go in, and we've taken Carissa Richardson out, former Ole Miss forward. And, you know, she didn't play a whole lot, you know, but the reality of it is things change so rapidly when it comes to college athletics. I mean, you know, you don't even know whose jersey to buy for your kid for Christmas, right? Because they could be gone before they open it. But there's going to be a big change. There's also some chatter out there about Chris Jans being linked to the Texas A&M job. Now, I'll tell you, I have not heard that from anybody that I would consider reputable yet. Because a lot of times what happens is people, as a guy that has put these hot boards together, you go with the hot names, right? You go with the names, number one, that may have a connection to you. You go with the up-and-comers. You find some people that may have some connections to your program or your athletic director, and you put a list together. And you kind of start narrowing that list. You'll add some names to it. You'll take some others off. And so, as you guys know, you know, Texas and other schools out there have changes from time to time. Texas A&M not excluded from that. You know, they went through all this stuff last year when you know, Texas fired David Pierce, and they were able to get Schlossnagel to go from A&M to Texas. And then you know, A&M apparently, allegedly, took a swing at Chris Beard. And why wouldn't you, right? Why wouldn't you? But if you're Trev Albert, who's the AD at College Station, you kind of start thinking about this, right? I mean, you had an absolute disaster of a head coaching search. Of course, Ross Bjork was involved in a lot of that. But if you're an Aggie fan, it just seems like, despite your resources and having the second highest budget in the NCAA, they're having trouble. And so I don't know if it's a culture issue there. You know, Buzz leaves and people are like, well, you know, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. And you know what? Buzz is probably smart to get out too, because you get a reset, right? The career counter. A&M, obviously, had a good year, not a great year. You know, we rushed the court when we beat them, but they didn't have, like, star power. I mean, it was a good team, and it's a tribute to Buzz, right? But now Buzz leaves to go to Maryland, and so you're kind of one step ahead of the fire, and that feels like, you know what, that gives me 3 years at a big salary to kind of figure this thing out. And then you look at the fact that A&M's baseball program is in the SEC dumpster right now. I mean, really, Missouri is the only team that you look at and say, hey, you know, this is a team that is better. But this A&M athletic department is one that I think is at a crossroads and is in some crisis. And so do I think that A&M would have interest in Chris Jans? Well, sure. Sure. Why not? Do I think that that rises to the level of concern at Mississippi State? Not at this point. And it's something to watch as we kind of get ready to go. But, I'm always intrigued by this stuff. And the first thing I'll tell you is that I'm really in no mood to cover a coaching search on any side of the sports spectrum. But when you have successful coaches, they're going to be mentioned in connection with other jobs. Because a lot of people say, hey, you know, Mississippi State's in the Southeastern Conference, and Chris Jans, you know, 3 consecutive years in the tournament. However, he's 1-6 in his career in NCAA tournament games. And that's probably not enough to excite the fan base. But let's be honest, fans are awful fickle, right? They'll make a change, and they'll get behind a coach until that coach, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, right? And so once the coach gets there and all of a sudden the problems are kind of emerge, because no coaches are perfect. When you don't win big, a lot of people have a lot to say about all of that stuff, you know. And so I'm not concerned yet. That may change on Monday, but I'm not concerned yet. And I know many of you are just, you're like, hey, Steve, I feel like we're close. And yes, it was frustrating not getting out of the first round of the tournament. And certainly we would hope to get to the second round and hang a Sweet 16 banner. It's been forever since we've done that. Going into next year, it'll be 30 years since we've done that. And like, I don't want to start over. Like, I don't want to have to start over. I feel like Chris Jans has laid a great foundation here. And I feel like that we're maybe one recruiting class away from being able to do that. I think that's an important aspect of this, of every bit of this. But I also know this too. I want to hire coaches that win here, because what that essentially means is that if other people want them, then they have done really well. Looking ahead too to the weekend, for those of you that are still keeping up, for many of you, the NCAA tournament ended when Mississippi State's game against Baylor ended. But it's so interesting to kind of look and see who's left. We talked about the potential, you know, with the SEC having so many teams in the tournament that it could be an all-SEC Final Four. It turned out it's not. You got Auburn and Florida on one side, so you're certain to have one SEC team in the NAFL championship game on Monday. On the other side of it is Duke and Houston. And so Auburn versus Florida, and you guys, Florida went into Auburn and absolutely embarrassed Auburn. You may have forgotten about that. And of course, Duke was on our side of the bracket. They advanced to a NAFL championship. We'd have played them in round two. And no, we would not have expected an upset. They absolutely throttled Alabama 85-65. But and they beat, you know, Baylor by 33, or 23, excuse me. So, you know, they've earned their place there. But it's interesting. You're certain to have an SEC participant in Monday's NAFL championship game. And then you'll have Duke and Houston on the other side. And so a lot of people say, well, you know, Steve, I don't cheer for the other SEC teams. I get it. I don't, once we all make bowl games, I don't cheer for us either, because the payout is the same, right? The money, we gain no benefit from that. The tournament I feel a little bit different about, you know, and maybe even so in baseball, just because of the fact that I think that, you know, we don't, you know, when LSU wins it, you know, you're going to be recruiting head-to-head of them a lot, so you want to be able to, you know, you want to be able to maintain some face there. But I think in men's basketball, Auburn and Florida are fishing in much deeper ponds than we are when it comes to recruiting, so I don't know that it hurts us. So I'm going to be pulling for whichever SEC team wins, but I'll be honest with you, I don't have a lot of emotional investment in this. And so tomorrow, Saturday, you'll have the national semifinals. And then at least one SEC team will advance to a NAFL title game, and then we'll see what happens Monday night. And, again, the tournament is fun, but I think a lot of people at this point that aren't huge basketball fans get a little fatigued. Like, everybody kind of pays attention, you know, the first couple days of the tournament, because you never know when Monmouth may beat North Carolina or something. You know, there's always just some upset, and it makes everybody believe it's the beauty of the tournament. But a lot of people watch that NAFL championship game, even if they haven't watched one the last couple weekends. And there's a lot that's going on these days, for sure, as you guys are well aware. And speaking of that, I just want one final thing that I want to say about this before we get out of here. I guess before I do that, go to DirtyNobleBook.com and you can get signed copies of the Dude and all my sports titles. That's Alpha Dogs, Stark Villains, Flim Flam Dogpile, and When the Bottom Falls. Selling a lot of those. But I share that with you because I think it's important. I appreciate the support too, but nobody else is out here writing Mississippi State books. And so you need them for your fan cave and things of that nature. And come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. The wife runs a show down there. That's 662-268-7601. You can find us online, True Rest Float Spa of Starkville, on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all the cool stuff. But give her a call if you're a person that suffers with chronic anxiety or pain, or you just need a break. We may be able to help you too. A lot of people that have come in, even had some baseball parents come in here as of late saying, I got to buy a membership. Yeah, you should too. But one of the things that I like, the civil tenor in this country right now, I've always been a live and let live person. And maybe that's not completely accurate. At least in recovery, I have been a live and let live person. When my early 20s, I was extremely judgmental. Extremely. And it was one thing about myself that really bothered myself. I prayed about it a lot. Talked with my sponsor about it a lot. I was like, you know, and it, one of the things he used to always talk about is, you know, the majority of things that people get angry about aren't their business. There's a lot of that these days. And I think social media makes it worse. And the tribalism, because people feel like that, hey, that I'm part of something. And you could be part of something very negative. It's like, hey, this is what I have to do for the cause. Guys, can we stop vandalizing other people's vehicles? Can we do that? I don't care what you drive. It makes no difference to me. I don't know what your motivations were behind buying a vehicle, but I would never go deface your vehicle, ever. Ever. I wouldn't do that. And not just because I fear reprisal from law enforcement, but because I love my fellow man. I just wouldn't want you to walk out there and all of a sudden, because of who you think I voted for or who I thought you voted for, all of a sudden you walk out there and your vehicle is vandalized. I mean, life is difficult enough as it is without us causing problems for each other. In addition to that, too, what's going on down at the schoolyard? What is going on with all this? And let me just tell you this, you're going to get caught too. No matter how smart you think you are, you can't trust people. I'm just telling you, you can't. You certainly can't trust teenagers, especially with big secrets. You can't. We got to get that fixed. You know, we talk about all the problems we have in the country. You know, it's like so much of it involves personal behavior. It's true. And every time I turn around, like somebody's getting in trouble for something they posted on social media, just don't do it. It's okay to say it among your friends and family, but you go out there, you're putting your livelihood in danger. And you know what? We'll have other elections. And things change. But man, it's incredible right now how political ideology has become the identity of so many people. And you know what? I believe in accountability. And it's probably a good thing for a lot of other people that I'm not in charge. Because I'm a firm believer that believes in justice without mercy. I really believe that. I believe in justice without mercy. I think people should be held accountable to the full extent of the law when they break the law. And there are other people like, well, you know, they're a good person. They just had a bad episode. You know, maybe you don't know them the way you think you do. It's true. And I think about this deal with this teacher, man. It just blows my mind. And the thing that I always think about is the family. Can you imagine the shame and embarrassment upon the family? Right, they show that woman getting arrested and her husband's in the car and he has no idea what's going on, as far as I know. Can you imagine that? Like you get pulled over one day and they're arresting your wife and you find out that this inappropriate relationship's been going on and it's so incredibly offensive. I mean, can you imagine how that guy slept that night? Can you imagine how he felt waking up the next day and his wife's picture is posted all over the news and social media? And along those lines, too, I think there is a lesson to be learned. I'm not going to say the girl's name, but there's a lesson to be learned about this girl at Ole Miss, too. So many people went out there and just immediately assumed all those things were true. And, you know, they've done a kind of a little bit of PR campaign to kind of get her story out in front. Don't believe everything that you read on social media, and certainly don't share it. And there's all this salacious stuff that happens. And again, all of that to me is goes back to people being rooted in insecurity. It's like, hey, look how awful this is. Look how terrible this person is, to kind of get attention off ourselves. We need to focus on ourselves and our own behavior. I'm a firm believer in that. You know, we talk about that all the time. You want to make your community a better place, be a better person. Be a better person. Don't just spread news and gossip and rumors and innuendo about people that you don't know anything about. It's true. And I remember when all that stuff first came out, I was horrified, like many of you. And I'm like, oh, what, are you kidding me? You know? And I felt so bad for the son, right? Because if you're like, think about it. And of course, it appears these allegations are false. But it's like, even think about, just thinking about that aspect of it, how precious that relationship is between a father and son, mother and daughter, right? If there's one guy in the world that you should be able to count on, it's your dad. If there's one guy in the world that should always have your back, it's your dad. And I don't blame people for defending themselves. Absolutely, without question. I believe people should be held accountable. Now, I think it's important that we hold the right people accountable, but I'm a firm believer in accountability. And I'm really, really, really sorry for this young lady and her family and what they've gone through. But, you know, I don't believe in this whole perpetuation of rumors that are meant to character assassinate or assassinate people's character. I can't get behind that. Now, it's one of those things, too, if somebody actually did something, because I believe in accountability. But I think it's important to have the facts, and not just run whatever what the trend on Twitter is. And, you know, it gets people talking. It's like, oh, my gosh, can you believe this? And it's like the bigger, if you're going to lie, make it big, right? I mean, that's what's so incredible about this stuff. But I just think it's so important for us. We talk about loving each other, and sometimes that doesn't mean a hug or a kiss or even a handshake. But to have respect for each other, man, and wait for the facts to come out too. I mean, it's just once you get the facts of something, you know what? Hey, you can share whatever opinion you want. I mean, it's a free country. I just think it's important, number one, to protect yourself, but to protect each other. You know, I'm a firm believer in this, man. You got something to say to me, you know, you say to my face. You know what? If you got a problem with me, then call me. And if you don't have my phone number, then you don't know me well enough to have a problem with me. That's an important aspect of this too, right? But we have these opinions at times of people that we don't know anything about, and we get so passionate about it, and it leads to some very negative behavior. And so so for all these people out here, you know, getting your cars vandalized and, you know, people spreading rumors about you, my heart goes out to you. You don't deserve it. And I just think it's important for everybody to kind of take a step back sometimes when it comes to what's on social media and ensure that we're not taking part in something that could be untoward. I think it's, you know, it seems difficult to even have to say that, but we have become so addicted to social media. It's like we can't wait to tell you, did you read this, man? Did you read this, man? Like this dog's house, this dog painted this guy's house, or, you know, there's always something, you know, that's out there. And there's some good things about social media too. We had a situation here in Starkville. I want to tip my cap to the Octobahaw County Sheriff's Department. So there was a building that got robbed, or burglarized. And next thing you know, there's like, you know, some footage out there. There's like pictures of the car and of the, you know, the man and the woman that were the suspects of this alleged break-in. And they put it out on social media. The community responds. Less than 24 hours later, these people are apprehended. Now, of course, they're guilty. They're innocent until proven guilty. But that's a good use of social media, right? When we have people around here that are committing crimes and working against our community, they need to be held accountable. And the sense of self-entitlement that goes along with all that stuff is just absolutely offensive to me. We talk about things to be offended about. That's one of them. But let me just encourage you, as always, just take a breath. Take a breath. And don't believe everything on social media is correct. And your chances are, if it sounds like it's not true, it typically is. It typically is. So before you hit retweet, before you hit share, be sure what you're sharing or retweeting is accurate. And last thing I'm going to say before we get out of here, I feel like I'm rambling now, but please, for the love of God and all of humanity, please, please, please stop sharing these missing dog, missing person, free house, discounted car posts from these Facebook groups that turn off comments. Nobody, and I repeat, nobody that has a missing loved one or a missing dog would ever turn off comments on those posts. And they say, hey, please share. Well, they're sharing it because they've monetized their account. And you're more likely to share that because you're a good-hearted person. So you're flooding everybody else's feed with these fake missing dog, missing persons post on Facebook. And people are profiting from your goodness and in some respects your ignorance. And I don't mean that in a negative way. You're doing it because you think, you know, hey, I just want to help, Steve. Well, you're helping them put money in their pocket. And there was a situation, I think it was in Illinois, that there was a true missing persons case. And it happened, I think, 4 years ago. And anyway, what happened is the guy had a car accident and ran off in a ravine and bled to death. And so somebody has taken those pictures and they're recirculating them. And every time that they do, this family has to relive this horror all over again. All over again. And it starts in these stupid, you know, swap meet groups. And the people that run those groups, you bear some responsibility in this thing too. You want to start the group, you need to manage the group, moderate the group, and ensure that those things aren't being posted. But you, as Facebook listener, Facebook viewer and user, you need to be mindful of that. Do not share any of those posts. Like, let's say, hashtag the community or whatever. I mean, there's one dog that is laying on a maroon blanket. He has been missing at all 50 states. Same dog over and over and over again. Same pictures. And people just keep sharing it and sharing it and sharing it and sharing it. Stop doing it. Stop doing it. That's my soapbox session for today. I'm getting ready to get cleaned up, and then we'll head out to Duty Noble Field. Reminder, tonight's game at 6, tomorrow's game at noon. No current change to Sunday. We'll let you know as we go. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.